And Emma is very pretty, Riley said. Unforgettable.
She did the right thing, you know,
he added. When there's trouble of some kind, I like it if they go through me. Or Nick. Nick is brilliant with situations like that. He's not a big guy. He's a short, stocky Italian, but he manages to seem 6'6" if he has to. To the women who work for us, he's a sweetheart until they push him too far, try to take advantage of him. Then he's great at getting serious and making his point firmly. Not meanly, but firmly. With the men, he's one of the guys until they try to take advantage, and then he's clearly the boss. No one wants to mess with Nick. He's got a look, a scrappy look. Often a potential client will get an estimate from Nick and then come to me looking to sweet-talk the lady boss into a better, cheaper deal. She laughed and shook her head. It hasn't worked even once. I'd have liked it if Nick had been there when the police came, she went on. I'd have liked it if Nick and I were both there when the police confronted Mr. Andrews, but that's asking for a miracle.
I'm sure they found him, Logan said. He'll turn up at work or a bar or come to the hospital to try to offer up some lame excuse for beating the shit out of his wife.
What will happen to him? She asked.
He'll go to jail, Logan said, spearing an artichoke heart with his fork.
His wife might think to make peace by denying...
There was a witness and evidence of a beating. You think the police don't know what she's up against? They know what she'll say, what she'll do, and they've heard it all before. By now she's as messed up as he is. There are two lawbreakers who can't make bail. Battery domestic violators and drunk drivers. They get to spend the night. In the first case, so their victim has time to get away, if he or she will do so, and in the second case, to sober up.
Riley thought about that. That's very clever of the police, she finally said. Here I thought abusers and drunks could get away with stuff all the time.
They do, even with all the stops in place. But we're awful smart. We know how they think and act.
You are smart, she agreed with a laugh.
So tell me about Emma,
he said. Why do you want to know? She asked.
Because you're friends,
he said. Riley scooped some more greens from the salad on her plate, focusing on the antipasto and not him. We're not friends, actually. I've known her for a long time, but she's only recently come back to Santa Rosa after being away for years. She needed a job. That's pretty much it.
Oh, no, it's not, he said, laughing. You two have some kind of important relationship that goes beyond work.
Is that so? And how would you know that?
He shrugged. Experience, body language, tone of voice, eye contact. The way you two respond to each other. There was a lot of chemistry in your office for a little while.
Sassy, she said, lifting her eyebrows. You're a smarty pants, aren't you? We were friends in younger years.
I thought so.
We went to school together, but Emma went away to college, moved away after college, got married, and just recently returned, after the death of her husband.
Aw, he said, chewing. She's young. That's sad.
I gather it was a bad marriage.
Abusive.
Why would you ask that? Riley wanted to know.
It would explain her sensitivity to that woman being abused.
Huh, she said. I thought I was intuitive. But I don't know if the marriage involved that kind of abuse. Her husband wasn't a good man, I hear. And he killed himself. As soon as she buried him and sorted out her affairs, she came back here. I suppose she feels comfortable here, where she still has a few friends. Logan whistled.
Suicide? That's ugly.
I suppose that would be hard to deal with, even if you hated the guy.
Yeah. I hope he left her something.
I doubt it. If he'd left her anything, would she be cleaning houses?
Were you and Emma close friends in younger years? Because even though you're the boss and she's the employee, I detected something. Like an element of familiarity. Intimacy.
Intimacy? She asked, aghast.
Not sexual intimacy. Or maybe it was trust.
From her?
Riley asked, a bit incredulously. Well, from both of you. If you looked anything alike, I'd make you out to be sisters. There was that familial give and take, like sibling love hate. You know what I'm talking about. We all have it. I can call my sister a bitch, but no one else can. There was... You know each other very well. She smiled at him.
We were good friends as kids, but that was a long time ago. We haven't even been in touch in over 15 years. Don't you love the Riviera Antipasto? Isn't it the best there is? We should have gotten the bruschetta, which is also the best there is. He put his elbows on the table, leaned forward, and smiled at her.
If there's something you'd rather not talk about, you can just say so.
When I'm on a date, which I so rarely am, I'd rather not talk about another woman, Riley said. Besides, if your secret motive is that you'd like to date her, I believe she's taken. And I'm not one bit happy about it either.
His eyebrows shot up and his eyes were as round as saucers. One look at him and she knew he wasn't going to let that one go. Do not be a tease, he said.
Riley sighed in defeat. I suspect she's seeing my brother. Adam said he ran into her, that it was really great to see her again after so many years. They went out for a glass of wine, and he passed on one of my business cards. I said she'd never call me for a job, never work for someone she'd felt kind of competitive with when we were kids. Not nasty competitive, not rivals, nothing like that, but still... Adam's been curiously busy and stupidly happy lately.
That made Logan smile. Why, Riley, you little witch.
Well, she works for me. Do you think I want to see her at every family function? That would be a little complicated, don't you think?
The waiter was just passing by and tried to snatch the antipasto platter, and Logan stopped him. We're still working on this, but I'll have another beer, and I think the lady will be ready for more wine in a few minutes. Thanks. Then to Riley, he said, I think there's more to it than that, but I don't want to screw up the rest of our date. I like the way our dates end, slowly, with lots of personal contact. So, how about those Lakers?
I didn't want to give her a job and my brother, she said.
He reached for her hand. I thought she was a good-looking woman, and have absolutely no interest in dating anyone but you. You're a showstopper, Riley. And I want to make out with you like mad.
I might be falling out of the mood, she said.
Drink more wine, he urged. We're going to be on hiatus over Christmas, and by the time we get to... Hey, should we make plans for New Year's Eve?
Maybe. She said. Can I check with my daughter first? I want to be sure she's not on the loose while I'm partying with you.
Fair enough, he said. Here comes dinner, and save a little room for the tiramisu. Damn, does that look good or what? He gave her hand another squeeze. Come on, baby. Let's get in the same canoe here. Tonight's about us. I want to impress you with my manners, good taste, brilliance, and sexual allure. She laughed at him.
I don't want to hear another word about your sexual allure, especially in front of the waitstaff.
Killjoy. Some women find the spectacle of a man willing to make a fool of himself in public very titillating.
Do they now?
You know they do, Riley.
And he winked. Logan had learned something tonight,
like what an idiot he could be.
First of all, a detective with a working brain would have waited for her to bring up Emma before homing in on her and their friendship. And second, whatever was in their past was enough to take Riley to another place and nearly ruin the evening. Maybe he wasn't smart enough to balance a budding relationship and a case because he was hot for Riley. He liked her in a way he hadn't liked a woman in a long time. By the time the conversation got around to Emma possibly dating Riley's brother, she was shutting down, moving away,
Riley didn't seem to mind talking about the fact that Emma was pretty, that she'd had a bad marriage, but she didn't want to talk about Emma and her relationships with men. After dinner, he managed to persuade her to do a little kissing beside her car. He even talked her into getting in the car for a little more. But when he asked her to come to his place for an hour or so, she was too smart for him.
"I'm afraid not, Logan," she had said. "I'm not ready for that next step."
And he said he was ready whenever she was, and she replied,
"I know. I can tell. I'm so smart that way."
So now they were driving home to their own houses in their separate cars, and he had the feeling something had changed. Instead of going forward, they were moving back. And this had something to do with Emma, even though Riley had no idea of his interest in Emma. His cell rang and the number popped up on the dash screen in the car. Georgiana. He pressed the connection for the hands-free.
"What?"
he said.
"Hello, dear," she said.
"You're late for dinner again." "What do you want?" "What if she'd been in my car?"
"Didn't you say you'd be meeting for dinner?" "Why would she be in your car?"
"Because she drank too much wine and I had to drive her to my house, which I very much tried to do. But she left most of her second glass and declined my invitation. And I'm a little unhappy, so why don't you just leave me alone?"
"Did you learn anything?"
"No, not anything useful."
"Why don't you go ahead and tell me, huh?
I'm much more objective than you are."
He took a breath. She was right.
"There's some significant history between the girls, but it's obviously complicated. When I started to ask about their history, using all of my brilliant detective skills, she mentally moved away from me. That's when I lost her. She was fine talking about Emma coming back here, needing a job, getting over a bad marriage, generic on the bad, no details. But when I asked what their relationship was like when they were young, she shut down. Oh, and she thinks Emma might be seeing her brother."
"She doesn't know?" George asked.
"Not for sure, I guess. How firm is that?"
"Every night."
"How do you know?"
he asked. "The only conversations they have are about what's for dinner and when will you be here." Logan thought Adam Kerrigan was getting a lot luckier than he was.
"I don't get it,"
he said.
"They're one nice, big, happy family. I saw Riley and Emma today, working through a tense situation, supportive of each other, friendly. The brother and the mother obviously like her. But Riley's smart. She's scary smart. You think she knows something and doesn't want her family mixed up in it?"
"Possible," George said. "If you don't have anything interesting to tell me, I'm going to kiss the kids and hit the sack. Bruno's on shift." Bruno was not his real name. Mr. Universe's real name was John.
"Good. Don't call me anymore."
"You know, it's probably a good thing you didn't get laid."
"Shows what you know. That's almost never a good thing."
"Oh, I can think of a ton of circumstances when getting laid would be a really bad..." He hung up on her.
Chapter 16. Emma received her second phone call from Bethany 2 days after the first, again while she was driving home from work. She learned that Bethany's mother had died from a freakishly terrible case of the flu almost 2 years ago. She got sick, then got sicker, was admitted to the hospital, then to the ICU. It was the kind of thing that usually happened to the extremely frail, chronically ill, or elderly. But it got Danielle Christensen, taking her life in a week. The family was, understandably, wrecked by it. Then Olaf Christensen brought home a woman he had worked with for a long time, a CPA in his import-export company. There were many such businesses in the port city, the Bay Area, and the Christensens was successful. Danielle had only been gone a couple of months, but it seemed to help him a great deal to be seeing this woman. Liz was 40 and had never married, had no children, and before 6 months had passed, they were married. Everyone loved her.
She was good at her job, active in her church, popular at work, laughed a lot, and showered attention on Bethany's father. But she never laughed with Bethany. Only with Bethany's father and other adults. Before they even married, Bethany's stepmother was taking over the house. She fired the cleaning lady who'd been with them for years and hired Riley's company. She made every meal or ordered something she could pick up on the way home or booked reservations. The once comfortably lived-in house became spotless and sterile. Danielle's clothes were moved to a guest room closet and chest of drawers. Then, little by little, they moved back to the master bedroom. The family pictures were removed. Liz said, "They're certainly not helping our situation, these constant reminders." Bethany was told to clean her room to Liz's specifications, and if she didn't, Liz went in her room, put things away, and tidied up. In order to keep Liz out of her room, Bethany followed the instructions. When Bethany just wouldn't stop acting depressed, Liz found her a therapist. "I heard her saying I should be put in a hospital or boarding school, but my dad didn't agree. Maybe I should. I would be away from them." Bethany told Emma she took a bunch of drugs from Liz's medicine chest and had to have her stomach pumped last Christmas. Emma gasped. "Oh, sweetheart, how terrifying. Please tell me you'll never do that again." "No, I won't. It was horrid. It turns out Liz doesn't have any good drugs," Bethany said. "Well, I guess that's a point in her favor," Emma said. "I know Christmas is hard, Bethany. But if you start to feel terrible, will you please tell a school counselor, or teacher, or someone?" "I could try, but I think I'm just gonna ask my dad and Liz if I can be a foreign exchange student. My dad wants everything to be all right, but I think Liz would be happy to see me go." "Do you have pictures of your mother?" Emma asked. "Pictures you can look at to give you comfort?" "I have some in my drawer." "Bethany, what about your grandparents?" "My grandma is in assisted living. She was so good, but when my mom died, she just got so old so fast." "And what about your friends from school?" "I have friends at school, but they don't want to hang out anymore. I think I make them sad or something. And Liz makes them nervous. She's too much." Emma was almost surprised to hear the sound of her own laughter. "Okay, I wasn't going to tell you this, but I have a stepmother. And she's too much, too."
"No way,"
Bethany said. "Rosemary. I remember when my advisor in high school told me I was so lucky to have a mother like Rosemary who was strict and made sure my homework was done and had a strong set of values. She said I'd appreciate it someday. Rosemary was kind of scary. Her smile was fake, if you know what I mean."
"I know what you mean," Bethany said. "My stepmother doesn't like me. She pretends in front of my dad, but it's not real. Sometimes I can hear her complaining and crying to him, saying I don't appreciate her. Maybe it's just because she's not anything like my mother. I don't know. It's like we don't live in the same house anymore."
"Tell me about your mother," Emma said.
"She was so sweet. Not that she couldn't get mad. She chased me with a mop once, yelling her head off. But she couldn't catch me, and then she laughed her head off. She was kind of messy. She left her clothes on the closet floor all the time, and our cleaning lady, Mary, she used to grumble and mutter and complain, and my mother would laugh and say, 'Come on, Mary, I'm such great job security.' But my mother could cook and bake. The house always smelled great. And she loved to go to my school things. She worked at my dad's company, too, but she'd take off to help at school, to go on field trips, to watch my concerts and programs and stuff. And she used to—" Bethany's voice slowed and stopped. Emma could tell she was crying. We used to get in bed together and talk and rub each other's backs and heads and laugh and fall asleep in a pile.
Emma struggled to find her own voice. I love your mother, she finally said.
Thank you for saying that, because I believe you. And you don't even know her. I wish I could be with her.
She's with you in your heart, and I believe she's watching over you. You're going to be like her, you know. Maybe not tomorrow or next week, but you're going to have a great life and make your house smell like great things or baking and laugh with your children and fall asleep in a pile. You will, Bethany. I grew up and moved away from my stepmother, and you'll move away from yours.
Did you move away and have a great life?
Emma bit her lip. It wasn't really a lie if she thought about where she was now.
Yes, I have a lovely life, a happy life.
Cleaning houses?
Yes,
and meeting wonderful people. When they hung up, Emma drove the rest of the way home, crying all the way. Was she helping by taking these calls from this poor, grief-stricken, lonely girl? She remembered when her life was at a point like that, when she'd lost her father, when she was just 16. But she had Riley, and Riley hadn't been afraid to hang out. The 23rd of December fell on Friday, and that was the day Penny and her girlfriends chose for their little Christmas party. The girls had decided that everyone would bring substantial hors d'oeuvres, and Marilyn agreed to make two desserts. They were going to have a cocktail party and ornament exchange. Earlier in the week, Emma had helped Penny bring in her tree and put her decorations up. She brought another centerpiece and wine. Her wrapped presents were under Penny's tree. She'd been looking forward to this holiday for weeks, her first Christmas as a free woman. And especially her evening with the girls, Penny, Susan, Dorothy, and Marilyn. But all the while, it was hard for her to shake off Bethany's call. Their wine was poured, their cocktail plates were loaded, they were comfy in Penny's little living room, and someone toasted, "Another year gone to hell." They all said, "Hear, hear," with laughter. "You're not quite as perky as usual, Emma," Marilyn pointed out. "You haven't had another pan of pee tossed at your head, have you?" Emma shot wide eyes to Penny. "You told?" "Way to keep it to yourself, Marilyn," Penny scolded.
"Well, I don't have to keep it from Emma, do I? You haven't had a falling out with that lovely Adam, have you?"
"No, he remains lovely." "Really, Penelope, I can't believe you told about that."
"I'll see Adam late tomorrow night after he has his dinner and celebration with his family."
"I have the littlest work problem, that's all."
"Do tell," three of them said at once.
"I shouldn't. I don't believe you're entirely trustworthy," Emma said.
Dorothy laughed.
"Don't worry about that, Angel. No one listens to us anyway."
"What happened at work?" She sighed. Truthfully, she was dying to talk to someone, and these old biddies were good listeners, as long as she didn't name names.
"I've gone and done the dumbest thing."
"What? Tell us at once."
"But it's not a happy story," she apologized. "I don't want to cast a pall on our party. I've been looking forward to it."
"Ha! We love trouble and misery. We can take it."
"Indeed," Emma said with a frown. "It's quite sad, really."
They had no trouble talking her into it. She was more than ready to unload. She started with the new clothes in the trash, the scarred desktop, then the diary, and her bold move in leaving her number.
"Oh, bless you, little darling," Susan said.
"You're all mush, aren't you?"
Then Emma explained Riley's rules and Bethany's two calls. "Oh, my dear, you did absolutely the right thing,"
Penny said.
Someone has to talk to that child.
But what can I do to help?
I'm sure listening helps, love, Dorothy said. Where is that girl's grandmother?
I asked, as a matter of fact. Apparently she went downhill fast after her daughter died and is now in assisted living. I don't know the details, but I gather she can't be of much help in her condition.
Some of us are frail,
Marilyn said.
Not us, mind you. We turned into leather. Tough old broads who've outlasted way too many friends. You can give her our numbers, Emma. There's no group of grannies who know more about the pain of loss and the way to move on than we do.
I bet you would be good for her, Emma said.
What about that woman, the new wife, wearing the dead woman's clothes? That should be against the law. I'm calling my lawyer after Christmas. I'm going to give him a list of names of those approved to be seen in my clothing after I'm gone,
Marilyn said.
Save your dime, Penny said. No one wants your old lady clothes.
It is awful, though, isn't it? Emma asked. She made a point of saying she asked them. But what's a young, grief-stricken girl going to say?
Sounds like she can't help herself, Susan said. She's probably a well-meaning idiot, trying to make her new husband happy, keeping the house immaculate to impress anyone who's watching that she's a caring mother, getting expensive clothes for the girl, rather than giving time and understanding.
They put her in counseling, Emma said.
So what? I have an ex-sister-in-law who was a counselor, Susan exclaimed. Worst fucked-up piece of work I've ever seen.
Nice language, Dorothy said. You know what you should do, Emma? You should talk to that nice Adam about this. You said he's lovely with teenagers.
With his niece, I've seen a little of that. But I'm working for his sister. I broke the rules. I wonder if he'd feel obligated to tell her. Because it wouldn't be the first time I've broken the rules. Not long ago, I called the police on one of our clients.
They all leaned toward her as one. Their eyes were wide and hungry.
I don't believe you mentioned that, darling, Penny said.
I'm going to need another glass of wine, Marilyn said. Don't tell about it until I've gotten reloaded here.
A man was assaulting his wife, beating her, Emma said, going through the story, explaining she was supposed to call her directors or Riley, but she just called the police.
Good for you,
everyone said.
I thought strong women had died off, but look at you go, Dorothy added. I might have chased him with a tire iron, the bastard,
Penny said.
Exactly why I carry, Susan finally said.
I just wish I could have seen them arrest him, Emma said.
Say, she looked around the room. Penny, just how much have you told them about me?
Well, there was that story about the bedpan. Slowed down the bridge table a bit, that one. And, of course, that little bit about the Ponzi.
You told them all that, did you? Emma asked.
You wouldn't want them to be caught off guard, Penny said.
I say good riddance, Marilyn said. Thank goodness he had that Saturday night special in his office.
It was a Glock, you dolt, Susan said. At least keep your weapons straight.
Emma was shaking her head.
What's the matter, darling?
Penny asked.
You're incorrigible, she said.
There is no logical reason why I should want to be exactly like you.
Yet,
they all giggled and lifted their glasses.
To women with balls, someone said.
If Riley was asked by a client to provide holiday housekeeping service, she charged double and offered the jobs to her senior housekeepers. There were always at least a few eager for the extra money, and they would arrange their holiday celebrating accordingly. She was careful which jobs she accepted and who she sent because Nick and McKenna shouldn't be asked to supervise. And Riley wanted to be called only in an emergency, which shouldn't happen with a skilled crew. Christmas was a holiday she'd dearly loved since Maddie was born. They did most of their celebrating at June's house, and Maddie wouldn't have it any other way. Jock had joined them for dinner a few times, usually showed up early Christmas morning to watch Maddie open gifts, even stole Maddie away for a few hours to spend time with his family. He was always very cordial and respected Riley's wishes, not pushing too much. He still spent most of his major holidays with his mom, dad, brother, and sister. Once he'd asked if Maddie could stay over so they could have Christmas